The path to the postseason grows narrower and narrower for Virginia and Virginia Tech basketball as they face each other for the first time this season. We'll talk about that and a whole lot more this week on Teal and Barber. Welcome to episode 131 of Teal and Barber, our Virginia Tech, UVA, and ACC sports podcast. You can subscribe to the show on Apple Pods or wherever you get your favorite podcasts. I'm Mike Barber, ACC beat writer for the Richmond Times-Dispatch, and joining me as always is my co-host, the 14-time Sports Writer of the Year, the Virginia Sports Hall of Famer, Mr. David Teal. David, how are you on this, at least here, snowy morning?
Yeah, you guys got a snow day. We have no such weather down here in the southeastern part of the state.
I don't know. I know my kids are not jealous. I think I am. If work came with a snow day, if there weren't articles to write and podcasts to record, I might be more on board. But we've already had the kids out this morning in the backyard building snowmen, having a snowball fight. We've got a jungle gym kind of play structure that we had built during COVID, and the kids are going down the slide and crashing into big piles of snow. So they're enjoying it more than a school day.
Well, what are you inside doing this for? Go back out.
Oh, I'll be out there. I needed a break anyway. As I was telling you before we hit record here, I'm the only one in the family that doesn't have a pair of snow boots. So my feet were getting quite chilly. So it's good to come on in, warm my toes, get a clean, fresh pair of warm socks, and then we'll go out for round two, right? Grilled cheese and tomato soup. That was always my go-to snowy weather lunch. And I don't know, we're not part of that crowd. I don't know, David, if this is you, but the run to the store for milk and bread, we do a pot of chili and make sure we have grilled cheese and tomato soup. That's our snow prep.
I don't need the food line on the day before a snowstorm.
Do none of those people keep bread or milk in their homes normally? That's what I don't understand is everybody in the store, everybody was out of milk and bread at the same, yeah, little overreaction. We've been talking about this for a while. Are we overreacting to the shape of Virginia and Virginia Tech basketball right now, where they're at? The record's certainly not encouraging. They're going to meet Wednesday night for the first time this season. Are we panicking too soon, or is it time to wave some red flags?
I think panic would be a little bit of an overstatement, but it is mid-January. Fans are in full-throated panic, by the way, especially UVA faithful. The crazy thing is, tomorrow night's game is at JPJ. Virginia's got a 19-game home court winning streak. It's the second longest in the country to Boise State, which is 122 in a row. So you got to like the Cavaliers' chances tomorrow night. But obviously, Tony Bennett's bunch has defensive issues on the ball, not guarding and preventing penetration. We talked to him about it yesterday on the ACC's weekly coaches call. Mike, I was crunching some numbers. In the last four ACC games, and that includes the win over Louisville, Virginia's opponents are shooting 56.5% inside the arc. And what's the pack line supposed to do? Defend inside the arc.
Yeah, that's where there's a concern for me. Look, the bugaboo for the pack has always been somebody comes out and shoots 56% from three. What are you going to do? How far are you going to extend that thing out? You live and die with that. And they've lived a lot more than they've died with it, right? It's been great. Yes. But your point is very astute, because what we're seeing this year is points in the paint. And that is literally the thing you can't be giving up if you're Virginia. If you're Virginia, even if you give up penetration, it used to be the bad defensive outing was there were paint touches, but the ball would still get kicked out for a perimeter shot. And it was, did they make it? Now teams are getting all the way to the rim. And, it's been fascinating because, number one, they've struggled with on-ball defense, keeping people in front of them, despite the fact that they have, I think, the best on-ball defender in the nation in Reese Beekman. Yep. But it's a five-man game. And the guys around him, people are going by people not named Reese Beekman when they go against Virginia. Isaac McNeely is better defensively. He hasn't been great. I think the absence of Dante Harris becomes huge, a bigger deal with every passing game, because he's a second guy you couldn't attack. I don't think that they have, we talked earlier in the year about their ability to block shots. Ryan Dunn's very athletic, but I don't think they have a true, and they're not playing this way, a true rim protector, a guy that if it breaks down, there's a Jay Huff right, waiting there to swat six or seven shots. They're good.
Or Mike, paging Caden Shedrick.
Yeah, who they certainly could have had. And you mentioned the angst of Virginia fans, that his production has certainly been a part of that as well for Texas. But it's a team now where when you get to the rim, if somebody can slide over and help, great, but there's nobody there to protect. They're getting beat off the dribble. So, David, my question to you is it fixable?
Yes, to a certain degree. I mean, we are more than halfway through the regular season, not halfway through the conference season. But it's only going to get so much better. Harris's return would be a huge boon. I don't know what the deal is with the ankle, how close he is. Tony Bennett, I asked him, a week ago about it. And he's getting closer. He's, moving a little better in practice and such, but he hasn't been full go. The Jordan Minor experiment intrigues me. Inserted him into the starting lineup at Wake on Saturday. Now, part of that was matchup driven, maybe a large part of it, literally and figuratively, given that Efton Reed is 6'11", and I don't know what they list him as weight-wise. But what did he finish with? 9 points, 5 rebounds, and Tony Bennett, again, sang his praises and said the young man has not given up. He clearly, he's a graduate transfer. He figured he was going to play, albeit in a zone system. He was the defensive player of the year in his conference, in the Northeast Conference at Merrimack, and hasn't been able to get on the floor. Why? Because of defense at UVA. But if Minor can give them a lift, he doesn't have to play 30 a night. If he can play 15, 20 minutes a night, that would be invaluable as well.
Obviously, they're not going to throw the baby out with the bathwater. But to me, it's incumbent, I think, on Tony Bennett and his staff to figure a way to make it work with Minor on the floor. Right. I understand he's been slow to pick up some of the things in the pack. So whether it's the right lineup with Ryan Dunn there to help him, whatever it is, I think Tony Bennett, the only way that this lineup and this roster works is with what you just said, getting 15 to 18 minutes from Minor, getting some rebounding, getting some physicality near the rim, getting a little rim protection. I think you have to do whatever works to make that lineup work for you. I think to me that's objective number one. I think when you do that, if you get Harris back, you've got Beekman, things fall into place. I mean, I've been saying this all year. I liked the construction of the roster, but it was based on Minor playing the five, Jake Grove playing the four, and then I love the way it all came together. Another issue for this team, David, that I think is, I know Tony Bennett ascribes it to youth, right? They've got a lot of young players, a lot of relatively inexperienced players. I get that. The difference in their offensive execution and shot making, home and away, is just, it's staggering to me. And again, I get it. It's hard to play on the road. And, they've been letting some of their offensive struggles affect their defense and it snowballs. But the numbers, let me share some of these numbers with you that I went through here. Virginia right now is shooting 48.8% from the field at home, and then away from home, they're down almost 10 points. They're right at 40%. That's a huge drop off. 3-point shooting, even worse. They're hitting 40.3% of their threes, which is very good.
Yes.
At home. I mean, they are, that's what's wild. They are lights out, 40.3 from three at home. They go away from JPJ, David, they're 27.4% beyond the arc. They can't hit shots. They can't hit threes. They're a different team. They're turning it over almost three times more a game on the road. Now, the Memphis game certainly skewed that statistic a little bit, but is it just youth, or why is this team a different animal away from Charlottesville?
Mike, they got the yips on the road.
They really do.
It's in their head. I really believe that. And when it starts poorly, the word you just used, very apt for your weather today, you're right, it snowballs.
Yeah.
And then they have even bigger issues. And what did we talk about on the pod last week? And Tony Bennett has mentioned this before. They're in the midst of seven straight Saturdays on the road where they're going to face rabid crowds because they are UVA and they are one of the elites. They are one of the premier programs and fans want to see them and fans want their home squad to beat them. And that's why tomorrow night is fascinating to me in so many different ways Virginia absolutely must have it. And then you mentioned what an elite defender Reese Beekman is. Well, on most nights, maybe all nights when Virginia Tech is going to play Virginia, who's Beekman going to guard?
Other team's
Couture,
best
right?
player, right? Hunter Couture,
Okay.
but.
He's going to play Hunter Couture. But number one, is Couture going to play because of the concussion he sustained against Clemson? Number two, Sean Padula is on a heater. I mean, Mike, 91 points in three consecutive ACC games. His best three-game stretch against the ACC in his career before this was 50 points.
It's been unreal. And he scored 26 in the road loss to Florida State, 32 at home in the win over Clemson, 33 in the home loss to Miami. You pointed out to me each one of those bettering his own career high for points. So he's just getting better and better. The interesting thing for me, and you're right, is what Sean Padula is doing well right now is exactly what we talked in the opening that Virginia's not defending well. He's getting into people, he's getting by people, he's getting to the rim. If they play off, he's pulling up. He's got the ability to hit the three. He can score from all three levels. He is the worst case scenario right now for this defense. Now, if it's me, whether it's Couture in the game or not, I think you've got to put Beekman on Padula. And part of it is what you talked about, a mental thing. You can't let Sean Padula go for 30 points and beat you after he's just done that three games in a row in terms of the points. I think you got to put Beekman on Padula and say, look, we're going to cool off your big guy. Who else can beat us? Now, Virginia Tech's intriguing because if Couture can play, we've seen it. Couture can beat you. My guy, and I know he's been a little less productive here in the heart of ACC play, but Lynn
Lynn
Kidd,
Kidd.
what is Virginia David going to do with Lynn Kidd? Are they going to post trap him? Does he deserve that level of DJ Burns kind of attention? Or are they going to play him one on one? If so, who are they going to play him one on one? Is Jordan Minor the guy? Do they trust Blake Buchanan, the freshman? Do they go small and post trap with Groves and Dunn, which has been effective at times? That's as far as X's and O's, that's one of the most intriguing things to me, and not just because I'm the president of the Lynn Kidd fan club.
It is the X's and O's tomorrow night will be, especially on Virginia's defensive end, very interesting to watch. My guess is that Miner doesn't start, that they bring him off the bench and they kind of see how it goes with the other lineup. You know, they'll start Grove and play it that way. Just a hunch. And because, you know, Kidd's not that real big physical type who can overwhelm you. And that could play to Buchanan too. You know, Buchanan's issue is he's just not strong enough yet to handle those big cats down on the low block. Lynn Kidd's got a little more subtlety to his game. It's very effective, mind you, but he's not going to overpower you. And that's been Buchanan's issue.
Yeah, I think a Buchanan Kidd matchup would be one that after the game we say decided the game. I don't know which way it would go because, Buchanan is athletic. He can move. He's done some good things when he doesn't have somebody just knocking him off the low block. And Kidd, we've seen in stretches where he can really go at a guy who isn't going to muscle him out of the paint and be a fa that to me feels like if it's the matchup we end up with when the game's over, it's what we're asking both coaches about, regardless, depending on who wins that matchup.
Yep, I think that's very possible. And the one thing you hope is everybody's healthy. I mean, I want Couture to play. Heck, Dante Harris. Let's see him out there. Obviously, his minutes would be very limited because it would be his first game back after having missed 10. But you want to see the teams at full strength and see what they've got. And it's just round one, and they'll do it again in Blacksburg when the stakes could be even higher. You know, it's interesting, Mike. It's a little early to be obsessed about the net and such, but Virginia Tech is far better positioned than UVA when you look at the net numbers. Number one, non-conference strength of schedule. I think Virginia Tech's is, where is it, 39th. That's outstanding. Virginia's is 142, and Tech has three quad one wins. You know, they've got Boise State. They've got, who else do they got?
Iowa State.
Clemson. Yeah, and Clemson. And Virginia just has the one, which we saw in Charlotte over Florida, which seems like a lifetime ago.
It does. Florida has, I think, looked better since that game. Texas A&M, I think that will end up being a qual. I think,
Quad.
yeah, I think Buzz has got them back on track. They had a little bit of a dip there, but you're right. I think one of the things that's interesting about both of these teams, and I think I wrote about it earlier this week. I think I put it in there, but they've got the wins in the non-conference that if they did what we thought they were going to do in conference, you'd feel really good about them. I think if Virginia had a strong ACC record with a win over Florida and a win over A&M, that's to me a no-brainer tournament team. The problem is, David, where are they going to get these ACC wins? It's interesting. Going into the year, one of the reasons I liked Virginia to contend for the regular season title was they only played Duke once. They only played Carolina once. Their schedule wasn't brutal. Now I look at it and say, is there enough meat left in their schedule, right? If they get going and they start playing well, you're not going to sway the committee with Georgia Tech and Louisville and Pittsburgh. That's just not going to change. Is there enough left on this Virginia schedule for them if they're playing well, which is a big if? Is there enough left for them to get where they want to go to the NCAA tournament?
There is, and they still got to go to Clemson. That would be a huge win for them. They get Duke and Carolina both at home, right? They don't go to either place if memory
I
serves.
think it's 1-1.
Oh yeah, they go to Cameron, don't they?
They go to one, play the other at home. So they
Yeah.
split those two. Either one of those would be huge.
And then they have State coming back and NC State coming back next Wednesday at JPJ for a rematch. And they'll have to play Florida State. Leonard Hamilton's bunch is playing much, much better. I mean, heck, they're in the top 100 now. They've skyrocketed in the rankings, having won four in a row and getting healthy. So yeah, I think there's enough meat left, but they're gonna have to win multiple, not just one, multiple, like three or four road games.
Yeah, well, and you hit on this earlier, so I think I know your answer. Who is Wednesday night more important to?
UVA, without question. I
Because
mean, because they're at home and because they've been so bad on the road, to drop one at home would be oof.
yeah, I think it could be a knockout blow for either team if they play poorly. If either team played poorly and got beaten by 18, it could be kind of curtains. But I think Virginia Tech, if they play well, lose a competitive ball game, there's enough left. It's a road loss. It is what it is. I think if Virginia, kind of what you talk about, the yips, if Virginia can't serve cold serve at home, then what are they? I mean, they at this point have to run the table at home and find a way to get their self-corrected on the road. Part of the issue, I think, is perception of the league. We're going to get into that in a little bit here. And I'm curious, how much is a Virginia Tech win at this point, do you think, worth?
Worth for Virginia? Well, the Hokies are sitting there in the top 55 or 56 of the net. No, it helps. It's not on the road, so it's not quad one. But yeah, at this point, every win helps. It's better than beating Louisville again or Notre Dame, which they couldn't do on the road. A game such as you'll go to, is it this Saturday when they go to Georgia Tech? Man, what a tricky game that is, because Mike Damon Stoudemire's got some dudes.
I think that is, and I agree with you how important this one is. I think that's a must win if you're UVA. I think you have to go on the road and beat somebody to get that right. Just what you talked about with the yips. And I think if it's not Georgia Tech, it becomes, short of going and seeing a counselor and sitting on the couch, I don't know how you get out of it. I think that Virginia's season to me right now hinges on, can they beat Virginia Tech at home, go on the road and beat Georgia Tech?
Beat Georgia Tech.
If you do those two things, I think you're back in position, not just from a win-loss standpoint, but from a mindset, from an ability. If you can do those things, I think there are other games you can win. If you can't get both of those, I just don't know who you are that we would think you're an NCAA tournament team.
I think that's fair. And Georgia Tech has given, well, they beat Duke
Beat
once
Duke. Beat Duke.
and then gave him fits in Cameron on Saturday. John Shire was talking to us yesterday how impressed he is by by Georgia Tech's two freshmen, especially, you know, George and Ngongo, you know, Ngongo inside and George at the point guard. You know, that's that kid's first game at Cameron. I think he had 5 assists, 1 turnover in like 33 minutes. You know, all the poise you could have ever hoped for from a rookie in those circumstances. You know, Miles Kelly, he can shoot it now. You know, they're not great, but they've got some pieces.
Yeah, they've got some pieces. They've got some young pieces, which, of course, in the portal era, you don't know what that's worth because who knows where those guys will be next year. But it is a critical stretch for Virginia. It is a big time for Virginia Tech, and we'll get more into the Hokies after a quick break. Well, we are talking Virginia Tech, UVA, ACC basketball right now. Remember, you can subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your favorite pods. And David, let's dive in a little more to the Hokies here. We talked about Couture's status being unknown. We talked about how hot Padula is. When you think about this Virginia Tech team, how good do you think Mike Young's squad can be?
Well, the squad I saw beat Clemson last week can be pretty good. And Mike, they were good in all phases at every position. You know, that was a night when Tyler Nickel was just knocking it down and looked like the career Virginia High School League scoring leader that he is. And he let it fly early and often and got into one of those zones. And what really surprised me, I wasn't quite aware of how quick his release is. I mean, he does not need much space now. And then Robbie Barron, the young man from Richmond and the transfer out of Northwestern, he shot it well. They played good team defense against Clemson, especially on P.J. Hall. They frustrated Joe Girard. M.J. Collins, once Couture went out just before halftime with the concussion, M.J. Collins gave him great minutes. I think he scored 2 points, but he had 7 assists and played very good defense on Joe Girard, really frustrating him. So that team, again, at home, very impressive. Will it translate?
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see. I'm glad you mentioned Collins. He feels, certainly with Couture's injury, but even without, he feels kind of like the missing piece where if he gets into some kind of a role, and it doesn't have to be, you know, 32 minutes and 20 points, but if he gets into a role where he's playing that way defensively, he's giving them something offensively, he can change what kind of look Mike Young throws at opponents. He feels like potentially a key piece here for the back half of the year.
X factor.
Yeah. Perfect. Yeah.
Absolutely. And then Poteet coming off the bench to spell Lin Kidd, give teams a different look in the front court. It's not a terribly deep team by any stretch, but it is certainly a skilled team. And eventually you have to think that a Mike Young roster is going to perform on the offensive end. And up until that Clemson game, they had not. And boy, they turned that narrative on its head last week. And then almost had the double by beating Miami on Saturday. Mike Young was not pleased with some of their plays down the stretch and thought they lost a real big opportunity there.
How about the other end of the floor defensively? Because the numbers would tell you they're middle of the pack. Yeah. I think the eye test would tell you that they're not imposing. He's had some teams that seem to, in the moment, really dig in and draw a charge or force a turnover. And it doesn't seem like that's there. Is the potential there, or is this just a middle-of-the-pack defense?
Is Couture healthy? Couture is their Beekman, without question. And with him, they can be quite good defensively because he is, in football parlance, that shutdown corner that you can just throw out there on the team's best perimeter player and really like your chances. Padula is scrappy. He'll draw a charge every now and then, but he's not terribly strong. I mean, Mike Young calls him physical, and he did get a career-high 10 rebounds the other day against Miami, but I wouldn't call him a top-shelf defender by any stretch. Now, one guy we have even mentioned as a potential X factor for Tech, and he played well against Clemson, is another transfer, Mekhi Long out of Old Dominion. You know, he's kind of a tweener in that 6'6", 6'7" range. He can go rebound and maybe give you some interior defense. He hasn't been consistent enough for them either.
Yeah, I wonder if some of the issues for Virginia Tech, for Virginia, for probably a lot of teams around the country, we are in the portal era. You've got a lot of these transfer pieces, and we sort of gloss over it, but you have to build this chemistry with these new guys. You have a sense of what you're getting when you recruit them, but you got to see how they play with your team and your system. I think at Virginia Tech and Virginia, there's been a little bit of a longer feeling out process for how the parts go together. Now, I think that can be a good thing, right? That can mean that the right answer and the right combination and the right minutes and it's still out there, or maybe it isn't. Time will tell. But I do think that you just mentioned some key players at Virginia Tech who I think it's just taken a little bit longer to figure out how those pieces all mesh together, which is why I think there's still potential there.
In contrast to Wake Forest, where Steve Forbes just throws them out there
My goodness. Has he
and
found the secret sauce for going out, getting guys that we kind of look at and say, I don't know. Like, to me, my thought of Wake Forest this year, David, was, yeah, that worked once. I don't think it's going to be your. And here they are doing it again, especially at the offensive end. It is different for every program. How much do you rely on those transfers? But what he's done at Wake has been nothing short of remarkable with incorporating those transfers.
Yeah, especially Salas and Miller this season, and now Reed that with him eligible, I think they're 8-1 since he hit the floor, and they're a problem. And if Damari Monsanto comes back from the knee injury that cut short his season a year ago, like he was shooting better than 40% beyond the arc when he went down. Now, would it be a challenge to suddenly try to incorporate him into the rotation? Probably, but Steve Forbes seems to figure that kind of stuff out.
He seems to
And
know what he's doing.
he was funny yesterday. We were asking him about, because they're like the number three free throw shooting team in the country. They're like at 80 something percent. And and I'm paraphrasing here, he says, there are shooters and there are makers, and we got makers. And I'm like, that sounds like a coach who likes his team.
Yeah, and I also thought it was interesting. He told you when you asked it, how much do they work, David, on free throws in practice?
Zero.
Yeah, I mean, some coaches after every drill, it's go to the line. At the end of practice, it's shoot free throws because you do it when you're tired. I've heard so many different takes on. I think Steve is the first person to say I don't do it at all. He said that they go live and you get fouled, and you take a free throw and a scrimmage, but otherwise, he said there's no going to the line. There's no drill where they try to tire you out and then have you take free throw. There's no ending practice with a pressure free. He just doesn't do it. And just like we said with incorporating the transfers, hey, whatever you're doing, don't change it because it's working.
Yeah, no, he's a different cat now. He's a lot of fun. I
He
enjoy
is.
talking to him, and I really enjoy watching his group play.
Yeah, they're fun. They're one of four teams right now in the ACC that's 4-1 in league play. Plus, you got Carolina at 5-0. So, David, I'm talking about Carolina, Florida State, Duke, NC State, and Wake. Carolina teams plus Florida State. Of those, who is the best? And since I think I know the answer, of those left, who's the second best?
So you're putting Duke and Carolina aside?
I'm kind of putting Duke and Carolina. Yeah, it
Yeah.
seems like they've separated for me.
Yeah. So you're asking me who's the third best team in the league, right?
Right. Yeah, that's a more succinct way to ask it. Yeah.
I
We
may
all
even go.
need editing.
No kidding, especially me. Mike, it may be a team that you didn't even mention.
You like Miami?
Clemson.
You like
Clemson.
Clemson? Yeah.
The metrics say Clemson. If you look at KenPom, the net, they all say that Clemson is the third best team in the league. And I like the roster. You know, you talk about Virginia's roster makeup. I like what Brad Brownell has there. PJ Hall is elite. Joe Girard is a shot maker, and they've got other pieces. You know, they've got the brothers in the backcourt who are really good, the Hunter brothers, and Ian Shefflin's one of the most improved players in the league, and Wiggins is athletic. You know, it to me, it's either Wake or Clemson.
I lean towards Wake. My concern with Clemson is what I've seen of late, right? Like, if you take the whole body of work, I'm like, yeah, that's a good basketball team. Of late, we saw them lose three in a row, albeit against at Miami. That's a really good Miami team. They gave up 95 points to Miami. They lost to Carolina. Then they lost at Virginia Tech, gave up 87 points there. It just doesn't seem that when they play elite offenses, they're able to shut them down right now. Even some of their wins have been what I would consider high scoring, you know, victories. To me, Miami, who beat them, has so many offensive weapons that if we're going to play a high scoring game, give me Jim Larrañaga's Hurricanes, because the addition of Matthew Cleveland, that is a complete offensive team. If he can teach them to play a little defense,
right? That
and I don't know that he can. I don't know that he can.
that's the problem, Mike. And we were talking with Coach L about this yesterday. The crazy part of their defensive numbers is they are one of the best 3-point defensive teams in the country. They are one of the worst 2-point defensive teams in the country, and a lot of that is they're just not very big. I mean, Norshadow Mir, I mean, Lynn Kidd is your man crush. I love Omir's game, but the dude is only 6'7", and there's only so much he can do by himself in the interior, and they get shredded inside the arc.
Norshadow Mir, to me, and I think he's better, but it reminds me of Jaden Gardner. I always thought if Caden Shedrick had come around for UVA, Jaden Gardner might have been unstoppable with the attention that Shedrick would have drawn. If Omir had somebody playing next to him, even like an Efton Reed or a DJ Burns who's a great passer, I think he would be an unstoppable force. The problem is he's sort of forced into almost that five-man role, and he is a little undersized there. But I really like Miami because of their offense. I like Wake because of their offense. I don't think anybody eclipses Carolina and Duke. I think they are starting to pull away. So before we wrap up here, how about the state of the ACC? And we got a lot of basketball left to play, but you mentioned the net rankings, and I know you don't put much stock in it, and probably we shouldn't, but Joe Lunardi and his projections at this point, he's no Patrick Stevens, but maybe not as far as accuracy, but in terms of national perception, how many ACC teams do you think are NCAA tournament worthy or on that path? And how many do you think will actually get the invitation?
Well, here's the ACC's advantage compared to this time a year ago, when they only got five, they only ended up with five teams each of the last two seasons. A year ago, Mike, there were five ACC teams outside the top 150 of the net. Today, there are only two, and that's Notre Dame and Louisville. And Notre Dame's right on the cusp. They're like at 156, 157, something there. And Louisville's better than a year ago. They're not very good, but they're far sight better than a season ago, right?
And David, they're better than 2 months ago, which has the potential to help the ACC down the stretch.
Yes, although it could also screw things up because they go and beat people.
Beat somebody, absolutely.
Yeah, much like when they beat Clemson last year and arguably cost the Tigers a bid to the NCAA tournament. Mike, I think if you're right now, I think Duke, Carolina, Clemson, to me, feel nobody's a lock, but those three are going to be in the NCAA tournament. I really like Wake's chances. Larrañaga is going to figure it out. He's too good a coach, and there's too much talent on that roster. I think so. There's five right off the bat. Now you're talking Virginia Tech, Virginia, NC State.
And Florida State.
They got a long ways to go.
4-1 in the league. They're in a better spot than Virginia at 4-1 in the league, though.
Well, they're 4-1 in the league, granted, but November counts too. And they have some miserable blotches on their non-conference resume. Now, that will be mitigated by the fact that the team is very different. They've gotten people eligible. They've gotten people healthy. You know, if they continue this trajectory, then yes, they could be in the conversation. And Leonard Hamilton would be in the conversation for ACC Coach of the Year to bring a team from probably in the 200s on the net to celebrating on Selection Sunday. That would be probably unparalleled.
It will be interesting to see. A lot of basketball left. We'll be talking about it. Thanks for listening. You can subscribe to Teal and Barber on Apple Podcasts or wherever you find your favorite pods. And please consider supporting local journalism with an online subscription to the Times-Dispatch. You can find special promotional offers available at richmond.com. Today's show was produced by Dean Hoffmeyer and yours truly. For David Teal, I'm Mike Barber. Thanks for listening. Be healthy and safe, and please join us again next week.